I have a serious question for all of you. Does anyone know where our guest speaker is? I didn't see you over there. Oh my goodness, if you were allowed to hug people, I would hug you. But monks don't hug very much, do they? Okay, good to know. Let us all give a standing ovation for Kusala Bhikshu. Thank you, Jesus. Do you all see me cross myself? I'm not even Catholic, but I played a nun in a number of operas. I'm like, thank you, Jesus. Okay, here we are.
Testing. It's working. Yeah, sorry for, I got a little bit behind schedule, and I snuck in. So. I'm going to talk about December 8th today, which is an unusual thing to talk about, seeing as it's already gone. But this is when the Mahayana traditions of Buddhism celebrate the Buddha's enlightenment. And it happened a while ago. Now, when I say Mahayana, I'm talking about China and Vietnam, Japan, and Korea. In the early Buddhist tradition of Theravada, they put the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and death all on the same day, the full moon day of May, which makes it really easy to celebrate. And the Mahayana decided to break it up. So they had the birth of Siddhartha, the enlightenment of Siddhartha, who became the Buddha, and then the death of the Buddha. So we have December 8th as his enlightenment day, according to the solar calendar rather than the lunar calendar. Now, you might wonder why it took him so long to get enlightened, because he was reborn many times before his enlightenment. And finally, the Jataka tales mention 550 times, but other texts talk about thousands of times. But there he was at the age of 35, middle-aged, and he sat underneath the Bodhi tree, and he became enlightened. He achieved nirvana. He achieved the end of his suffering forever and the end of all future rebirths. Now, for me, this time of year, Christmas, the irony is felt because we have Jesus who was reborn and went home to heaven to his Father. And on the opposite end of the scale, we have the Buddha, who was never reborn again, not even into the heaven realms. His existence stopped the day he died after his nirvana. Wow. So why would that be the case for Buddhists and perhaps not be the case for Christians, for instance? Well, in Buddhism, we have sort of a realistic view of what it means to be alive. And I tell you what, the last couple years has only reinforced that view to me. We have this thing called pandemic, and everybody is just going nuts. They're suffering more than they've ever suffered before. They're changing jobs at an incredible rate now. Usually this time of year, the holiday season, people change jobs anyway. But now, because of the pandemic, they said, you know, I'm just tired of doing what I'm doing. I don't even like what I'm doing. I'm going to find something that I like to do. And off they go. And a lot of them succeed. They find their passion. They find their place in life, finally. But it took a pandemic to inspire them to look around and see what was available. We also have the problem of aging. You know, every year I get older, and it's a little disappointing, but you know, you hang in there, you hope for the best. The memory, I find, is being challenged almost every day now. Some days it feels like my memory derailed and there were no survivors. You know? And yet, then again, you know, I get to take my little nap in the afternoon, and it's okay again. You know, I know where I am, I know what I need to do, time to feed the cats, life is good again. But the memory is sort of like, you know, strong, not so strong, strong, not so strong. And then I think, well, what am I forgetting? Is it really important to remember everything in my life? And I think, probably not. You know, I'd like to remember the good things, but maybe not remember so clearly the bad things or the unskillful things. Maybe as I age, my memory is saying, you know, we're going to put you in this place here. We're going to allow you to think about the good stuff you've done your whole life. So when it's time for you to check out, you're going to have so many good thoughts. You're going to be so happy you made it to Earth, involved yourself, worked at certain things, saved things, made things better for other creatures and people. You're going to have a lot to think about, but it'll be good. And I'm going, okay, cool. So now we're faced with this situation as a Buddhist. Our life never gets better. What we have is more acceptance of the way things are. Okay, now that doesn't sound like a big, you know, payoff, but it helps. It helps to accept things the way they are. So I'm on the freeway today. I'm 20 minutes out of Ventura. Can I make it? Will I make it? Will I find parking? Will I be able to walk there quickly enough to... And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, okay, just relax. Just relax. Accept it the way it is. And just sort of blend into it. Just sort of go with the flow. And so I did. And I felt good. And I walked through that door sort of secretively and sat down, hoping nobody would notice I was late. And then Reverend Bonnie says, "Is he here yet?" So much for trying to sneak in. But that's how it works, you know, as we go through life. So what the Buddha did, he said, okay, I'm going to figure out a way that I never have to suffer again. And if I can do that, I can share what I did with anybody who might be interested. He said, I'm not going to be able to end their suffering. I'm not ever be a deity or a god. I'm going to be a human being who figured something out and perhaps will be able to share it in an understandable way. And so for 45 years, he taught what he had learned and how he achieved his nirvana. But one of the most interesting things to me was the night he became enlightened. He had worked for 35 years now on trying to figure out how to do it. He was really close. He just had one more thing or a few more things to figure out. And he sat beneath the Bodhi tree. Now, the Bodhi tree, during December 8th, the Enlightenment Day, is often, you know, lights on it. You know, people are celebrating the enlightenment of the Buddha. It's sort of like a Christmas tree, but has a different meaning, of course. And so he sat underneath the Bodhi tree, and he went through the four watches of the night. So I had to write this down because I don't want to mess it up. Now, in Christianity, they have four watches of the night too. But I'm not going to confuse you. I'm just going to talk about the Buddhist four watches of the night. So now we have the first watch. Okay. And the Buddha sat there underneath the Bodhi tree, recalling his future rebirths. Thousands of them, but also the 550 talked about in the Jataka tales. Now, you might think, well, what possible use could it be to think back 500 or 1,000 lifetimes? It allows you to see how you made it there. And when he became the Buddha, when Siddhartha became the Buddha, he could look at you and see your past lives. And he would know exactly what to say and how to say it to allow you to progress along the path. Now, I thought, how cool would that be to look at somebody and see all their past lives? And then I thought to myself, I don't want to do that. I don't want to get involved in all those past lives. Because how many times have past lives turned out to be just crummy, you know? And I don't want to relive that with all those people, you know? I got my own crummy lives to think about. So I wouldn't want to do it, but he was able to do it and not be affected by it and be very helpful. So the first watch of the night is when he recounted all his past lives. Now the second watch of the night, he attained a third eye, sort of a mystical eye. And he was able, with that eye, to verify the law of karma. He was able to look at karma, which of course was a concept found in India and understood by Hindus and mystics and mendicants, but he was able to verify it. Now, the thing I like about karma is that it's totally equal for everybody. There's no prejudice. Karma doesn't look at you and think, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get back at you. Karma is like gravity. It's the law of cause and effect. And if you happen to fall down while you're walking, you can't blame gravity. You know, because gravity didn't care about you walking down the street. But when you stepped on that big rock on the sidewalk and lost your balance and fell down, gravity just sort of helped you along. And there you were. The thing about karma is, you know, it doesn't ever forgive you. It doesn't forget your zip code. It always knows where you are. And if you were unskillful and did something that caused others or other things suffering, there is a payback. There's never a get out of jail card. You know, karma is always going to be there. And that helps me be more skillful in what I think, say, and do. So thinking has the least amount of consequences. And we all have good thoughts and bad thoughts and unskillful thoughts and skillful thoughts, but hardly any consequences come from just thinking about stuff. But once the thinking turns into speech, the consequences increase dramatically. And once the speech turns into action, full consequences occur. So if you have some unskillful thoughts, just keep them to yourself. Don't turn them into speech. That's why we have TMZ. TMZ allows us to see a lot of unskillful speech. You know? And then the physical consequences, yeah, we all know how that works. So he was able to verify that on the second watch of the night. He also was able to find and see and understand the five places of rebirth. Number one, heaven. We get to go to heaven as a Buddhist if we're skillful and good, you know? But the problem for us with heaven is not forever. It's temporary. The Buddha realized everything was temporary. Even heaven realm. Now, the heaven realm is thousands of lifetimes, so it might seem like forever, but one day the karma that puts you into heaven will wear out and you'll have to leave. And I can't think of a worse scenario than having to leave heaven. I'm sorry, your karma account is empty, you gotta leave. The next realm of existence is the realm of the Titans. Now, these aren't really angels. These are sort of like interesting beings found in Eastern philosophy, but apparently it's just one step below heaven. The third realm of existence are the hungry ghosts. You know, and you can spot a hungry ghost because they're always hungry. And they're never satisfied. And it's like the first hell realm, that you go there, and you know, if you had one more building, an extra piece of chocolate cake, a new car, it would be perfect. But you never get all that stuff. So you're always stuck with this strong desire for more and wanting it to be better. And it never turns out to be the case. So that's the hungry ghost realm. That's one of the Buddhist hell realms. Now we have the actual hell realm in Buddhism. And the same karma that puts you into heaven can put you into hell if it's the wrong kind of karma. Now the hell realm, thankfully, is like the heaven realm. It's not forever. But you have to suffer to purify yourself and change the karmic consequences in order to be reborn out of that hell realm. And you can't do anything good in hell because you're always suffering and feeling like a victim. So you can't be kind and you can't be generous and you can't do all the things necessary to change your karma and have better consequences. It just takes time. So we try to avoid that. Then we have the animal realm. And I know, between me and Reverend Bonnie, that we like animals. And we have animals. And it doesn't really seem like the hell realm to me. But, you know, the animal realm is pretty limited. They don't have a whole lot of choices as an animal. Not like we have. They don't make things up. They don't have great stories. They don't have victims or victors. You know, they're just like, I want to eat, I want to sleep, I want to have sex. That's what they do their whole life. And so I'm there to sort of enable the cats I take care of to eat, to sleep, and then I get them fixed. And the reason it's important to fix your animals, dogs, cats, pets, is because there are too many of them. They're really good at having little babies. And there aren't enough humans with enough time and compassion and kindness to take care of all of them. And so we need to prevent a lot of them from being reborn. So in Buddhism, we prevent rebirth with nirvana. And in the animal realm, we prevent rebirth because of veterinarians and wonderful organizations that fix for free. Fix Nation is one of them. You go to Fix Nation, I want to get this cat fixed? Sure, sounds good. Will it cost anything? No, we're nonprofit. People donate. We fix them. And all the little animals that we've had fixed, it doesn't seem to affect them in any really negative way. They seem to have a little more joy and happiness because they're not going to be stuck with 8 family members and having to feed them and care for them and take care of them, you know. So, and finally, the last realm is the human realm. And you may not think about it in this way, but you know what? We all made it. We're all here. For some reason, our karma was good enough to be reborn as a human being. And I say that because this is the only place we can achieve nirvana. You can't achieve nirvana, with one exception, in heaven, because things are too nice. You don't want to change anything. You just want to enjoy the fruits of your karma. And you can't do anything in the animal realm. Now, I've been told with the animals, if the animal comes into contact with any part of the Dharma, like smelling incense, seeing an image of the Buddha, looking at Buddhist Tibetan prayer flags, whatever it is, that plants a seed. And in one of their future lives, they'll be reborn as a human being. Now, at the center where I live, we're counting on that. Because we want them to be reborn as a human, move into the center, and pay rent. So the human realm is the best place to be. We have just enough suffering to keep us honest, and in most cases not commit suicide, and just enough joy and happiness to make us think it's worth it. You know, so being human is wonderful. It's a blessing. We're so lucky. It's such a short time, too. It goes by quickly. Not when you're 10, but when you're 70 or 80, it seems to go by really quickly. And just to enjoy the fact that in all the universe that we know of, this is the only place we could be born, on this planet Earth. Now, we're trying to get to Mars. My theory is Mars was sort of like Earth at one time, and they screwed up just like we're doing. And so now we want to go back. Let's go back to Mars and colonize it. Then we'll have an escape route if things get really bad on Earth. Why not make Earth better? You know, just invest a little time and money in Earth, and it'll pay us tenfold back. So here we are trying to figure out why I'm born, what are the chances of me being born on Earth, probably 1 billion to 1. What are the chances of two people liking each other enough to have me? You know? Now, they didn't know I was going to show up. They were married, honeymoon. I was the firstborn. They didn't know what to expect. And then I showed up and they said, "Who the hell are you? You know, what are we going to do? We got to take care of you now." Well, only till you're 18. No, it doesn't work like that. The rest of your life, you're going to be knocking on the door. "It's Christmas. Can I come in?" Yeah, come on in. So it's interesting. The chances of us being born, the chances of us finding Earth, what kind of karma did we have? We had really good karma. So enjoy it in this holiday season and think, my, look how lucky I am. I'm still here. I'm still talking and walking, and life is going to get better because we have vaccinations. Yeah. Now, just, this is not political, but some people think it's the government is forcing us. And I'm thinking, yeah, it's forcing us to stay alive, helping us to live each day and not get really sick. That's the kind of conspiracy I like, the conspiracy to keep humans alive, you know? Okay, we come to the fourth watch. No, the third watch. Oh, the third watch is the most important of all. You know what happened on the third watch for the Buddha? He discovers the 12-fold chain of causation and the principle of interdependence and co-origination. Now, this is a big one. Those words may not mean anything to you at all right now. But this is one of the most important philosophical concepts that we have, that all things arise because of something else. Everything is interconnected and interdependent. Nothing can exist independently by itself. Now, can you imagine realizing that? That, you know, some people think, well, I'm independent. Yeah, that's the myth of the ego, though. That's the ego and personality telling us that we're important. And of course we exist independently because we need to survive. And we need to be separate from all the things that are going to kill us, you know? And we want to be part of all the things that we like and give us joy and happiness. And you can't do that if you're one with them. So we have to be independent. And the ego was the greatest gift we ever got. You may not think so. And a lot of people poo-poo the ego, saying, "Oh, look at that. Look at what the ego made me do. Look at what the ego sees in the mirror. This beautiful human being. It's me. And look how smart I am. And look at all the things I've done and will do." And the ego just keeps patting us on the back. But sometimes the ego says, "You stupid son of a gun. look what you did. Why did you do that? Yeah, have you ever just sort of woken up at 3 in the morning and thought about something that happened 10 years ago and wish you could take it back? Well, that's the ego and sort of being a rascal. You know, it's just trying to remind us that we're not as perfect as we think we are, but we're pretty perfect anyway. So the Buddha said, you know what? We can't exist without everybody else. We can't exist without the dogs or the cats. We can't exist without rain and topsoil. That rain and topsoil actually is the basis for our existence. And we never think about it. We never give it its due. We just say, yeah, you know, I'm going to go to Vons and buy something that's plastic wrapped. That'll keep me alive. But in order to get in that plastic, you need a topsoil and rain at some point in the chain. So here we are saying to ourselves after the Buddha woke up, wow, it's not just about me. It's about everyone and everything. And if I can help others be better, I'll be better. Because they're me and I'm them. And if they have any bit of success, part of that success will be me. And if they have suffering and they feel sort of deflated or defiled, you know, there'll be a part of me that feels that too. And I need to have empathy. I need to have those feelings and not reject them as being unimportant, but realizing that that's part of the connection I have with everything and everyone. And if there are millions of children starving in Afghanistan, which could be the case, you know, there's a part of us that's starving too. We can't deny that. We can't put our head in the sand and say, it doesn't matter. And even in downtown LA where I live, where all the people that are homeless and hungry and trying just to make it through another day, man, that's part of me too. And one of the things about meditation and Buddhism is to raise the mind of balance and equanimity. That we need to have this sort of balance to go out into the world and not be affected by all the good stuff and the bad stuff. But seeing it as all being important and all being part of us. And we need to accept that. And that acceptance comes through, according to Buddhism, practice. So practice is one of the things we do all the time because it helps us deal with all the suffering and joy in the world that we come in contact with. And you might not think that joy and happiness is a downer, but you know it is because it ends and you don't want it to. You want it to last as long as you're there. And it has a different idea. The joy and happiness arises, it exists, and it passes away. And you're one of the contributing factors, but only one of the contributing factors. So it's hard to let that stuff go. So happiness and joy may not seem like a negative, but it can be if you're attached and want to hold on and fear letting go, because it may never happen again. It will never happen again, but something else will take its place. We can never be happy in the same way twice. Wow, bummer. And we're not in control, you know? There's so many other factors that go into making us happy. Can we deal with that? Can we live in a realistic way? I think so. Is it fun? Well, it can be, but then that goes away. Is it painful? Sometimes, but that goes away. What doesn't go away? Everything goes away. So if we get attached to anything, if we want it to stay, if we cling, we're going to suffer. So the Buddha went into the fourth watch. And what did he find in the fourth watch? He found the dawn of his nirvana was breaking. Celestial events took place. Flowers fell from the sky. Hindu gods, Indra and Brahma, came to pay him homage. He remained under the Bodhi tree for 7 days, enjoying his release from suffering, enjoying the happiness of a balanced mind and a balanced approach to life. He is recorded as having said, "Here I have found freedom. It is the freedom from craving." But then he went on to acknowledge that ordinary desires are okay. So it's the craving, it's the clinging, it's the aversion, it's the attachment that's the problem. But we all have regular, ordinary desires. Oreo cookies might be one. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that if you don't eat too many. You know, watching a football game on Sunday, yeah, it might be okay. But you know, all these little desires, you know, maybe do the laundry, that's a good desire, though most of us probably won't be stimulated to do it right away. And then we have the desire of trying to live longer. Yeah, live longer. What is your time span? Can you add just a few more days or months or years if you exercise, have the desire to eat right, to get plenty of sleep, to wake up early in the morning? That's the best time to wake up. To go to bed sort of early in the evening, that's the best time to go to sleep. Do we have those little desires working for us in order to give us a little bit more life, a little bit better life, and a little bit more connection with all the other lives in the world? Yeah. So those desires are good. We don't want to get rid of all desires. We don't want to be a robot. We're human after all. And Ram Dass, one of my favorite teachers, would often say about this time of year and being human, he said, if you think you're enlightened, go spend Christmas with your family. You'll find otherwise. And so I just love Ram Dass. He was so down to earth and yet metaphysical at the same time. So here we are practicing what the Buddha taught. Here we are appreciating his journey through life, his birth, his enlightenment, and his death. Understanding karma as being the main reason we keep getting reborn. And if we can end our karma in nirvana, we'll never be reborn again. We'll live eternally, whatever that means in Buddhism, in nirvana. So people say, well, what is nirvana? Well, I don't know. You know, it sounds like it's a pretty good place to get to. It sounds like it's sort of difficult to get there. But I won't know what it's like until I get there. And even then, will I be able to express it in an understandable way to people who aren't there? Will they understand what the heck I'm talking about? Could that be the reason for noble silence when somebody asks that question? Probably. You know, we have a little fish pond in the back of the meditation center. And we have, you know, goldfish and a couple koi fish. And it's fun. And for a long time, we had a turtle. And the turtle would sort of dive in and swim around and then sun himself on the rock. And I imagined, in my mind, that the fish would come up to the turtle and say, "Turtle, what is it like outside the water? How does it feel not to be in the water? How does the sun feel shining directly on you?" And the feeling I had was that if the turtle was able to talk to the fish and try to explain what it's like to be out of the water, they wouldn't have a clue because it wasn't in their experience. And nirvana is not in my experience, but I have not faith, I have confidence that what the Buddha said was true, and that his truth would lead me to my freedom. So happy Bodhi Day, everybody. And thanks for showing up in person. It's so nice to see faces, even though they all have masks. But it's nice to see eyes. And enjoy the holiday season. Thank you.